Hi, guys, and welcome back to the Rare Wellness Podcast, the podcast designed to help you heal holistically and give you the tools that you need to thrive. We're making it easy to understand medicine and wellness with practical steps from the experts, one podcast at a time. If this podcast helps you live just a little bit better and a little more aligned, the only thing that we ask is if you would be willing to leave us a review so that we can continue to provide you with free, valuable knowledge from the experts of well-being. Your review means the world to us. And also be sure to follow us on Instagram at Rare Wellness Podcast and DM us your questions so that we can answer them on future episodes and interview experts in the field to give you the tools that you need to thrive. Today, I am so excited about this conversation. We're going to be talking about something that affects millions, but is often swept under the rug, pelvic floor issues. It's a silent struggle that many women and men face, impacting everything from daily comfort to intimate moments. Whether it's leaks or nagging pain, healthy pregnancies, a thriving sex life, there is so much that goes into pelvic floor health, and it's way more than just the Kegel exercises that we all know. We're diving into this crucial yet often overlooked aspect of wellness with Dr. Amanda, who is ready to empower us with the knowledge and practical tips that we need to thrive in this area of our life. Dr. Amanda is a doctor of physical therapy who specializes in all things women's health. She is passionate about empowering women to unleash their potential, whether that be training for motherhood during pregnancy or returning to high-level activities in postpartum or overcoming pelvic floor dysfunction in daily life. She enjoys all aspects of fitness, but wants every woman to feel strong and empowered. Dr. Amanda believes that when nothing is holding women back, they're unstoppable. So get ready to learn so much and have fun. Grab your favorite wellness drink and let's sit down for this conversation. Dr. Amanda, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited to chat about this. I feel like I have so many questions and I'm excited to learn about this because I feel like it's a topic that's like, it affects everyone, but we just don't talk about.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
I am too. Okay. So I like to ask every guest that comes on the podcast, what does wellness mean to you? Because I feel like everyone has a different take just based off of their life experience and their training. So what does wellness mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely encompassing like fitness, nutrition, kind of a lot of different aspects. And so I think being able to focus on all of those and kind of incorporate all of those together is going to allow you to be like healthy, right? So if we're exercising, we're moving our body, if we are eating, you know, whole nutritious foods, we're getting enough sleep, we're getting good quality sleep, you know, all of those different things, that's kind of how we can be well. And I think, you know, it goes further than just healthy, right? Like we kind of think like, oh, are we like healthy? That means like we're not in a state of disease. But I think wellness goes a little bit further. And so, yeah, it's not just that we're not in a state of disease, but we actually can live our lives like fully and kind of do whatever we want to do in our lives. So that could be, you know, running a marathon. That could just be, like you said, having a healthy pregnancy and becoming like kind of whatever it is that we want to do in life, we're able to do.
Yes, because like there's so much more that you can get out of life when you're not limited by like your body. Like you're able to be like you said, do I want to be a mom? Do I want to run a marathon? Like what are my own goals and like do I have the capacity to achieve them? And so it's just so cool holistically taking into account like all the different levels of wellness and when you put it all together, like the thriving life that you can create. So super cool.
Yeah.
There's so many of our listeners today who might be like, okay, pelvic floor health, I've heard a little bit about it before, but what exactly is pelvic floor health and what role does it play in our overall health?
Yeah, pelvic floor is huge and helping in all areas. So there's different aspects of the pelvic floor that we can look at. But I think starting with like, what is its role and what are its functions? And then we can kind of go into like, if it's not functioning, that's, you know, when we start to have problems and things like that. But so one of its main roles is going to be able to support all of the organs up above. So we're thinking, you know, all of our internal organs, bladder, bowels, and then uterus. And then when we're pregnant, being able to support baby as baby is growing. That's kind of one of like the big main roles there. It's definitely going to play a role in kind of eliminating stool and urine. And then also is definitely going to be playing a huge role in delivery of a baby and everything in there. So we want everything to, hold support. You know, we don't want to be having leaking or accidents, things like that. So it needs to be able to maintain that continence when we want it to, but then being able to eliminate when we need to. And then it also plays a big role in sexual health too. So from arousal, orgasm, all of that, it's going to play a huge role as a part of that. So, and then too, so that's kind of like the main functions of just pelvic floor, but we think of it kind of as a whole part of our core as well. So if you think of our core as being kind of like this soda can or like a core canister, at the top, we're going to have our diaphragm, and that's going to do all of our breathing. That's our breathing muscle for us. And then at the bottom, we're going to have our pelvic floor, and those should actually mirror each other. So when we take a big deep breath in, diaphragm's going to move down and our pelvic floor should move down. When we breathe out, then everything should kind of move back up. And if we are engaging our core, we're lifting up something heavy, we're running, we're jumping. Anytime we're increasing pressure in our abdomen, that pelvic floor needs to contract, raise up, and match that pressure. And then we have our spine in the back that's going to provide a lot of stability, and then a lot of small little muscles that are going to attach there and be very stabilizing. And then we have actually three muscles on each side that wrap around from our spine all the way to the front, kind of like a corset would be.
Yeah.
And then we attach to the bottom of the ribs and to the top of the pelvis, and that is going to be our deep core muscles. So we really want all of these, so, diaphragm, pelvic floor, all of our core muscles working together to give us the most stability and strength. I always kind of think of it as if you were on the beach and you are trying to jump on sand, you kind of feel like you're slogging through it. Like you don't feel coordinated.
Yep.
It's really hard. And that's if we're not coordinating everything together. But if we come and we're jumping on the gym floor, concrete, something like that, we can jump so much higher. It feels so much easier. And that's if we are coordinating everything together. That's how kind of our movement should be feeling. So it definitely can be, very just pelvic floor things that we're experiencing. And, we all go to the bathroom every day, like, right? Yeah. We all have, intimacy in our lives and, things like that. But it can also extend to be like, oh, you can actually feel stronger in the weight room, or you feel stronger when you're running. So it's not just pelvic floor, and it extends.
It affects every, the body works together with all its moving pieces to function well. I think it's so interesting because clearly we all have a pelvic floor. It affects us, right? Like you said, whether it's jumping or weightlifting or going to the bathroom. And it's like, because we can't see it, is a structure that so many of us are just never taught about. And do you think that, why do you think it's not talked about? And do you think that there's going to be a change in that in the upcoming years?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of uncomfortable, right? it's our private parts. Like, we don't want to talk about that.
It's your gut.
It's kind of this black box that we just kind of avoid and hope I don't know, hopefully nothing's wrong, so we're just going to not talk about it. But I think that does so much more harm when we don't talk about it, because, then if something is wrong, or, there's something going on, we don't know what's normal. We don't know if what we're experiencing is normal, or if, this is actually really bad and we need to be going to see a doctor.
Totally.
So I think that's kind of a big part of it. And I mean, I think too, kind of, I grew up Christian circles, still, still in those, but I think that can be a big part of it too, right? Purity culture, where
not talking about sex, not talking about
any of that, and
yes,
go be married and now go live a fruitful life. And you're like,
I don't have any of the tools I need. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%.
I think that can be a big part of it. And, I think things are definitely starting to change too. I mean, you hear, I know my mom's generation, my grandparents' generations, right? They're like, what is this pelvic floor? We didn't have that when I had babies. And,
your whole career is based off of it. Yeah.
So funny. And I think, we're starting to see a lot more women at least now be like, well, I've heard of pelvic floor. I've heard it's good for me.
Tell me more. Yeah.
I don't really know if I need it or what it is. But so I think it's definitely starting to become definitely more talked about.
When I think having open conversations and also just removing the shame from questions that we all have about life, we're all we're at the end of the day, we're all just human. We all experience the same thing. So I completely agree with you. Today's episode is sponsored by Rare Planet Health Supplements. I am such a firm believer in making sure that our body gets the nutrition that it needs for optimal physical performance, brain performance, and overall mood and vitality in life. Rare Planet Health has several different supplements that I have been integrating into my routine and that I highly recommend. But the one that I really want to talk about today is Rise. Rise is a dietary supplement that is a multivitamin, a probiotic, and also is formulated to help boost mental clarity. Whether you're an entrepreneur or you just want to be the best that you can at whatever it is that you're doing in life, this supplement is a great addition to your wellness routine. The bottle is super cute, which makes it really easy to integrate into your routine every morning, and it's designed to help strengthen your attention span with vitamins to help up your mental game, which I think in a digital era, we can all use. By combining a multivitamin and a probiotic, you can combat mental and bodily fatigue with a single supplement. It also provides support for intermittent fasting, improving your energy and productivity while decreasing your food cravings, if that's something that you practice, and has a large dose of vitamin A and B12, which will help your organs, nerves, and red blood cells remain healthy, as well as your skin and hair. The capsules are super easy to swallow, and each bottle contains 60 capsules, which should last you 1 to 2 months. They also offer a premium fish oil, which if you've listened to any of our episode with functional nutritionists and functional medicine doctors, as well as women hormone optimization, fish oil and omega-3s are so important for vitality and a healthy diet. They also have Ageless, which is a stem cell, joint, and tendon support supplement, and a few more on there. You can get your supplements at rareplanethealth.com and use code RAREWellnessPodcast10 at checkout for a discount on your supplements. Again, that's rareplanethealth.com. Use code RAREWellnessPodcast for 10% off on your supplement purchase. This podcast is also sponsored by Rare Wellness Med Spa and Wellness Studio. Rare Wellness is a space where you can connect to yourself and get all the tools that you need to thrive and heal and be your best self. Whether you're looking for premium yoga, bar, or movement classes, functional medicine, aesthetic services, massage services, IV hydration therapy, and more, Rare Wellness is the place for you. To get 10% off any service at Rare, use code RAREWellnessPodcast. You can book at rarewellness.com or the MindBody app. Lastly, this podcast is sponsored by NWC4RM.com, Northwest Center for Regenerative Medicine. If you're looking to reduce pain and avoid surgery, this might be the solution for you. Get back to the activities you love without surgery with regenerative medicine. Regenerative medicine is a non-surgical orthopedic procedure for joint pain, arthritis, and injuries. If you want to learn more about regenerative medicine and if this might be the solution for you so that you can avoid those surgeries and continue to get back to the activities you love operating at full capacity, go to NWC4RM.com. Regardless of where you are in the country, you can book your appointment there and do an online consultation so that you can see if this is the right fit for you. Receive a free info packet by going to nwc4rm.com and just entering your email, and you'll receive more information to learn more. All right, let's head back to the episode. In line with what we were just talking about, I feel like there's so many of us who don't know a lot about pelvic floor health. Have you had a lot of women like come in to see you, like not really sure what the pelvic floor is or why they need to strengthen it, or and then leave with like an entirely new perspective? Does that happen pretty often?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like the first session together, I always do 2-hour evals. That way it gives us time to like do a full eval hands-on and take a look, but also a lot of time for education. And I feel like half of my sessions are education, which can be huge. I mean, kind of like you said, like people don't really know about their pelvic floor. We have some studies showing us, they asked 17 and 18 year old girls, like 200 of them, how many holes do you have in your pelvic floor? 87% of them didn't know.
Yeah.
Which is huge. Like that's almost all of them, right? Like don't know what's down there. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think even just educating can be huge and kind of like the first step of treatment. And we have studies too showing us that that can like help and get those like a lot further than maybe we think. Like we think, oh, physical therapy, it has to be physical. Like we have to be doing things all the time, but like education is so empowering and huge. Like if you don't know how many holes you have down there, if you don't know how many or what is normal, like just giving women the power to like know that is so empowering. and just huge. And it's like, oh, okay, that's what's normal. Oh, well, that's not what's going on. Or, oh, okay, well, you know, I am experiencing this. It's like, great, we can work on that. Like, there's so many things that we
Because otherwise, you could have a problem your entire life and have no idea just because you lack awareness. So,
Totally. Or you think like, I mean, I think this is one that everybody says, right? Like, oh, you had a baby, you just pee your pants. That's just part of it. You just, you know, that's just the rest of your life. And I'm like, no.
It doesn't have to be like this. Yeah.
Like just it doesn't. It's common and a lot of women experience this does not mean normal.
Just because we all struggle with it doesn't mean we all have to, right? Like,
Yeah.
Okay. So in line with that, let's talk about pelvic floor disorders. Who's most at risk? What is a pelvic floor disorder?
Yeah, so if we think of pelvic floor disorders, one in four women will experience some sort of those, and we'll get into that in a second. But so yeah, one in four women experience pelvic floor dysfunction disorder. And of
even if they don't know it.
And of those that are experiencing dysfunction, about 50% of them are avoiding exercise completely because of issues with their pelvic floor. So that could be incontinence. So that could be leaking urine. That could be leaking stool. That could just be gas. And that can happen in like a whole host of areas, right? So it could be that, oh, I just pee a little bit every single time I cough or every time I sneeze. So we could see that. We could see I only experience leaking when I lift heavy or when I'm running or when I'm jumping. Like, so we can see it more in this like athletic contents as well. So there's kind of several different ways that we could see it show up that way. We could have heaviness or pressure through pelvic floor. And that could be with lifting, that could be, you know, picking up your kid, that could be just walking around. I mean, some clients come to see me and they're like, man, just if I'm on my feet for more than an hour, I just feel a lot of heaviness and pressure. We can also see pelvic pain. We can see pain around the pelvis. So kind of thinking like hips, kind of low back, or we could see kind of there, or we could have like internal pain. So like more vaginal pain. So that would be more of your pain with intercourse. That could be pain with inserting a tampon, or, you know, going to the gynecologist, which is never a good time, but it shouldn't be absolutely like horrific pain. So those are kind of the main ones that I'll see. We can also see a lot of like urgency too, when it comes to going to the bathroom. So, you know, the, oh my gosh, I have to go now. And I don't know if I'm going to make it to the bathroom in time. And if I don't, I might leak on the way there as well too. So we can see that. I see a lot, this isn't exactly pelvic floor exactly, but it ties in, like I was saying, with, you know, the core and everything all working together as one. We see a lot of the diastasis recti, which is those six pack muscles are going to sit a little bit further apart, especially during pregnancy. Everyone's going to experience that. And so we can start to see if we're not able to create tension through our deep core muscles, if we do a sit up or we're lifting up something, anytime where we're increasing pressure in our abdomen, we can start to see kind of a, you know, a bulge along the midline of our belly. So we talk about that. Talk about prolapse, which kind of falls into that. Typically people are experiencing a little bit more heaviness, pressure, but that downward descent of, you know, organs up above. So there's kind of lots of different areas. And then I feel like, you know, we can get into things with pregnancy and postpartum, and like all of those can become a little bit more, you know, just happen a little bit more frequently during that time too, which makes sense. We're putting a little bit more stress on pelvic floor once we're growing a baby.
100%.
Like if you've had a baby, definitely more risk for some pelvic floor dysfunction, but you don't have to have had a baby to have pelvic floor dysfunction. We're starting to see too, like high school girls that are, you know, in sports. I think there was one study, I don't remember exact number, but I want to say it was close to like 70% of high school girls that are playing soccer are complaining, or at least noticing that they're leaking while playing. But I think that's, you know, going back to like, we don't talk about it, you know, you're not, you know, 16-year-old girl like playing soccer to score a goal and like, hey, did you pee your pants? Like, we're not talking about that. But
and because it's not like, first of all, most of us don't know our anatomy.
Yeah.
Second of all, because this is not talked about, it's like so hard to know like what's normal, what's not. Does this happen to everyone? Is this just a part of being a woman? Like, is it not? Like, and again, if we don't have those conversations, how would you ever know? And when, in what context, like, would you talk about it? And so I love that we're normalizing those conversations. But yeah, and it's also interesting. So how complex and how much the pelvic floor affects, like, in all of these different modalities and area of life. And it's not like a standard thing that everyone's like, oh, I'm going to, like, let's check out my pelvic floor. Like, am I healthy? Am I not?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. So let's dive into pregnancy a little bit. Can you explain kind of the connection between pregnancy, childbirth, and pelvic floor health? I know you mentioned that it adds a lot of extra strain on our pelvic floor.
Yeah. So as baby is starting to grow, right, that's a lot more weight, like in the average of, like, and you can kind of, there's different takes on this, right? But kind of the average amount of weight you should gain during pregnancy is around 25. I mean, that's 25 pounds, but I mean, that's going to be different for everybody. There's, you know, a lot of variables in that. But so we think, like, that's a lot of extra weight that we are kind of carrying. Our pelvic floor does have to be able to support. Thankfully, we have 9 months for our pelvic floor to slowly adapt and get stronger as baby is growing. We don't just go from 0 to 100 and all of a sudden gain all of that. So that's good news for us. But so we just see those changes throughout pregnancy. But then when it comes to delivery, we really want pelvic floor to relax, get out of the way, and that way the uterus can actually push baby out. I think there's kind of this idea of, oh, my pelvic floor needs to be really strong so that way I can push my baby out with my pelvic floor. And that is actually the opposite. Pelvic floor is, it's all muscles. So if we think of it, everything is really, really, really tight and how we're, like, trying to push this baby through, like, it's not going to go very well, right?
Right.
And so we actually want to just relax and kind of let it, get out of the way, and then everything else can work. So that's, like, the biggest thing that I feel like I work on a lot, especially when it comes to, like, birth prep too, is, like, actually making sure people can relax. And we talk about a lot of different strategies and coping strategies as well for that. But so that's kind of the big thing. And then we think, in postpartum, now we just, especially with the vaginal delivery, you had a baby just move through there. So we're going to see, maybe some heaviness, some pressure through there. We're going to see more movement through there. I think this just, like, drives me nuts. But when people are like, oh, I'm 6 weeks postpartum or I'm 10 weeks postpartum, and my doctor says I have a prolapse now. I'm like, oh, well, I would expect there to be a little extra movement. Like, you just delivered a baby through there. we don't need to be telling everybody that, and so I think, so there's going to be some changes that happen in postpartum, like I said, more movement.
I mean, you just push the human out of you.
Exactly. And we'll, sometimes we'll see a little bit more leaking early on, but a lot of that kind of goes away with time, but then also working on kind of strengthening that pelvic floor again, being able to kind of adapt to whatever exercise and activities you're doing. So those are kind of the big things that we'll see.
When it's a muscle, just like every other muscle in your body, like, you have to strengthen it, especially like when you go through something like childbirth, where, again, I'm so amazed at the female body, like what our body can do. Like, the more I learn about it, I'm like, I feel like for so long, like, women's bodies were like there was so much, like, always try to be smaller, like this, like, competition, this diet culture, this, like, so much emphasis on, like, how we look. And in reality, it's like, when you sit down and you realize, like, what your body is capable of, like, I feel like it shifts your perspective to have so much gratitude of, like, you're a miracle. Like, you can make another human being. Like, that is freaking cool. That is so cool. And I wish we put more emphasis on that and having gratitude towards, like, how incredible we're really made and, like, how incredible we're really built. And the fact that, like, we're an actual portal to life is, like, so incredible. And yeah, I just wanted to take a second to, like, acknowledge that. And even with everything you're talking about pelvic floor, like, the changes that our bodies go through, like, before birth, during birth, after birth, and, like, the fact that we can strengthen and, like, change and evolve over it. It's just so cool. It is so cool. Yeah.
I mean, our bodies are so resilient and so impressive. Think of all of your body goes through during pregnancy. Like, that's amazing. But even people that are like, oh, I didn't even start working out till I was in my 50s or 60s.
Yes.
Their bodies still change, maybe not as fast as they did when they were 20. But they're still getting stronger. They're still getting better. They're still improving.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing what our bodies can do.
So I know you mentioned earlier, there's, for a lot of women, like, after birth, they're like, I won't go exercise. Like, I won't do the activities that I used to do because my body's changed. Like now I'm leaking. Like now this is just like how it is. And I know you mentioned like it doesn't have to be that way, and that's actually not normal for us. So what are common symptoms that might indicate a pelvic floor problem? And like when should someone come in and see someone like you?
Yeah. So if you are having a leaking at all, with whether that's just like every time I sneeze, or it's every time I, you know, pick up something heavy, or anytime I go on a run, then I would say, well, once in a while, like, you know, if like, oh man, I drank so much water and then I was laughing so hard and I like peed a little bit, but that's like the only time it ever happens, and be like, okay, I would kind of expect that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if it's like once in a while, I wouldn't be too concerned. But if it's like, oh, every time I sneeze, every time I do this, or it's, you know, happening multiple times a week, I'd be like, yeah, that's definitely time to come in. Yeah. Any of that heaviness, pressure that people are feeling, you know, if you're like, oh, I'm standing on my feet, I'm doing dishes, you know, and now I feel a lot of heaviness, pressure, I need to sit down. That would be normal. Any like urgency, we should be able to, you know, we get that signal of I have to go to the bathroom, and then we should be able to go, okay, I can hold it and I can calmly walk to the bathroom when I, you know, have a chance, and I should be fine. But we shouldn't be like running to the bathroom all the time. Or you'll hear too, a lot of people will say like, oh, anywhere I go, I know where the bathroom is. I am always like, yeah, it's kind of like, yeah. Okay, bathroom there if I need
have
to
have my exit plan. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Or some people will be like, I can only, you know, drive 30 minutes away from my house because I don't know if there's going to be a bathroom, or it might be even less. It's like, oh, I can go to this store because I can get there in time if I need to go. So kind of really anytime like your bladder is more controlling your life, definitely can come in for that. And then anytime we're having like pain, so we should not be having pain with intercourse. We should not be having pain inserting tampons. We should not be having, you know, intense pain at the seeing the gynecologist. Like, I mean, yeah, a metal thing is not going to feel great.
No.
Like I said, but, yeah. You know, it shouldn't be like totally unbearable pain or anything like that. So anything like that is not going to be normal. And then even like low back pain, hip pain, I see so many people where it's like, oh, I kind of have, you know, is it pelvic floor? Is it back pain? They go so close together too, that I don't really treat one without also like treating the other.
Oh, you know, it's interconnected.
Forward. Yeah. 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 And we have some muscles that sit on the kind of inside of the pelvis that attach kind of into the hips a little bit too. So sometimes, I mean, I've seen people where they're like, oh man, I've just been having, you know, like low back pain. I've been having like SI, back of the hip pain. And they're like, you know, we've tried all the other things. And it's like, well, let's just see. Maybe it's like more pelvic floor than we're thinking. Because even if you're not having a lot of these other pelvic floor symptoms. And I'm just doing like an internal release of those muscles can clear up some of that pain that they've been having for years, which is kind of cool. So yeah, even like low back pain that's not going away with traditional approaches, that would definitely be a time to come see a pelvic floor PT as well too.
Yes to all of this. I also talking, I know this is earlier, but talking about the gynecologist and like how, like, I want to start a petition to make the gynecologist a more fun place for women, like a more comfortable place where it's like, you don't dread going. I'm like, can we make women's health like fun? Can we do that? Anyway, so I feel like that list of symptoms is just super helpful because like you said, like you don't know, just like being able to kind of use that as a checklist of like, okay, like does this describe me? Does this fit me? Like, let me take inventory and put that in my toolbox. So I know for the future, if it does happen, I have tools, I have resources. I'm not stuck timing my trip to the grocery store.
Yes. Yes. I do have a little bit fuller, like a little bit more in-depth screening on my website too, that people are always welcome to go to and be like, do I have this?
What's your, can you leave your website for us so that we can, what is it?
It's ascendptspokane.com.
Yeah. Perfect. I feel like even if, even for our listeners, if you live in Spokane, go check that out and maybe even book a consultation or an appointment just so, I feel like it's always better to know than not to know. And, if you don't live here, still go there, check the list, see if you qualify, and you can always find someone near you who can help with that.
And I do discovery calls too. So people can always just book a call and then we can chat and you can see like, is this, can you help with this? Is there something that's going on? So always happy to do that.
No, that's perfect. So what about aging? What does How does aging affect the pelvic floor, and what can we do to help that process as we get older?
Yeah, so as we think of like menopause, I feel like there's been a lot of, at least maybe just the circles that I run in, but it's like a lot more talk about menopause. And
right.
And I think we're starting to see too, like a lot of doctors don't have a lot of education in med school on menopause unless they have actually gone and done some more like continuing it on their own to learn about it. So when we see menopause come on, typically kind of the average age is going to be about 51 years or so. And that would be like kind of naturally occurring. That's not like, you know, something that kind of induced it early or anything like
yeah.
that. But when we are in that state of menopause, we're seeing decreased estrogen levels. And so estrogen plays a huge role in bone density. So we think of, you know, we always hear like the older lady that fell and broke her hip. Mm-hmm. And so that is actually kind of playing in that estrogen is going to really help support bone density. And then we also see our ligaments can get a little bit more kind of loose, I guess, when we don't have as much estrogen. And so that's where we kind of can start to see a lot more pelvic floor dysfunction show up, like in menopause.
Right.
It doesn't have to be, like I said, but we'll see, you know, sometimes we'll see a little bit worse prolapse or kind of a little bit more movement of everything. And so if we think of, we have our pelvic floor and we have kind of lots of ligaments that are going to support a lot of things. Well, if we're starting to see those get a little bit more loose, well, now our organs are kind of going to move a little bit more. And so if we're only relying on our ligaments, we're going to see a little bit more downward movement of our organs. We're going to feel more pressure. We're going to have more heaviness. But the good news is we can strengthen our pelvic floor, since those are muscles, then we can actually rely on the muscles to help support everything. So we actually have some studies coming out showing us that heavy resistance training can be actually very beneficial in helping prevent some like prolapse for that movement of organs and everything. So one study, I don't remember how many ladies were in it total, but so they had some ladies and they only lifted they lifted less than 35 pounds, and 60% of those complained of prolapse symptoms. So heavy pressure, you can see some leaking with that as well. And then those that lifted over 110 pounds, only 15% of them complained of symptoms. So that's like three times less, but that's huge.
Big.
60% to 15%, like crazy. We're kind of seeing that like there is this protective effect of lifting heavy weights, which makes sense. Like if we are, if we go into the gym, like day one, I wouldn't tell you, go put on 200 pounds on that barbell. Let's do squats, right? Like your body's not going to be able to that. But over time, you know, you start with 20 pounds, now you're moving up to 50 pounds, now you're doing 100 pounds. Like you're slowly building that weight. All of your muscles are getting stronger. Pelvic floor is also going to get stronger. So like I said, when we lift things that are heavy, the pressure in our abdomen is going to increase, and we need pelvic floor to be able to engage, contract, and match that pressure. So as we increase the heaviness, we're increasing that pressure, pelvic floor is getting stronger and stronger. So that's kind of my big thing too. And then also,
go ahead.
I was going to say, but if we think of going back to that bone density, you're kind of decreasing in bone density, the more we can do strength training, especially as women, the better we're going to see kind of those stronger bones. So we can combat, you know, that way we don't fall and break a hip, as easily, things like that, just the stronger we are. And that's, we start to see kind of a decline in some of that bone density at around 30 years old as females. And so we can think of like we can build and build and build strength as much as we can, and never kind of just at this plateau. We're like trying to just hang on to that as long as we can. But we can start even when we're in our teens and our 20s to train, so to speak, for menopause, because we know it's gonna come, but there's a lot that we can do to combat that.
And I love that there's actually, I feel like there's more of a trend for women like lifting heavy in the last couple of years, because there's so many health benefits. And I feel like, again, for so long, it was something that women just didn't do. Like they didn't live heavy. And I feel like there's so many misconceptions about lifting heavy. Like I know my Eastern European grandmas are like, if you lift heavy, you're going to like, it's too manly. You're going to hurt your body. You're going to hurt whatever, like all of these misconceptions that are just based off of like pure cultural myth. And You know, now that there's research out and like understanding the importance of it, it's just huge. Like it's huge. And it's crazy how much like that's a big statistical like drop in symptoms from just lifting heavy. Like that's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. When we think too, it's like, you know, we never go, oh man, I wish I was weaker.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, oh man, I wish that was harder for me to do like my daily activities. Like,
And I've been saying recently, I'm like, I want to be 80 years old, like throwing a football with my grandchildren. Like that is the goal. The goal is longevity. Like not just to live a long time, but to have a long health span, like to be healthy and active and movement and like just feel good, you know, whether you're like 18 or 80, like that's the goal. That is the goal. So I love that. So speaking of ways to strengthen your pelvic floor, we've talked about weightlifting. We've all heard of Kegel exercises, but is that really the best way to strengthen your pelvic floor? Is that the only way? How else do you do it?
Yeah. So when it comes to exercises of the pelvic floor, we really think of the pelvic floor as being on a spectrum. So some people need Kegels, some people don't. So when we think of that spectrum, on one side, we have all the pelvic floor muscles are very guarded. They're very tense. They're very tight. This is a lot of times going to be that pelvic pain, pain with intercourse, inserting tampons, all of those things. This can be like that back pain or, you know, the hip pain that I was talking about as well. In this case, if we're like just saying, go do a million Kegels, well, now we're just strengthening, we're tightening everything even more, and we're probably going to have a lot more symptoms with that. Yeah. So that person is not somebody that I'm saying, hey, please go do a million Kegels. Yeah. And on the other end, we do have weakness through the pelvic floor. So that's where we are seeing a little bit more of that prolapse, that downward movement of organs and everything. So with those clients, those are people that I'm like, yes, we do want to be strengthening pelvic floor. But it's not just like do a Kegel, try to tighten everything all the time. Pelvic floor should actually be pretty dynamic. So I think of pelvic floor as being like an A-frame house. So we have the attic at the top, we have the floor, and then we have our basement. So pelvic floor needs to be able to get to the attic. It also needs to be able to get to the basement, but we should not be living in either of those. We should be living in that first floor.
Yeah.
So I think when we say just do a million Kegels, a lot of people think more is better. Kegel all the time equals better. And then we get into that, you know, really, really tight, guarded pelvic floor. Yes. And we're just trying to stay in the attic all the time. And so that is definitely not what we want to do. We want to be able to relax and let things kind of move. And our pelvic floor should automatically respond. So if I pick up something heavy, it should engage. It should get into the attic. If I am going to the bathroom, it needs to relax, fully relax, get into the basement. Especially delivery too. That's going to be huge. Yes. Working on that, but it should kind of be automatically adjusting to what we're doing. If it's not, then that's where we're going to start to see some dysfunction or, you know, some of those symptoms and things like that we've talked about earlier. So kind of helping people go through that full range of motion is where I start, whether we're on either side of the spectrum, but they need to be able to feel like, oh man, I'm in the attic. Like I am so guarded. Yeah. I need to just like relax. And some people struggle, right? I mean, I think too, it's like our culture is so fast paced and do this and more is better. And like, don't really take time. And so, you know, it's easy to get kind of caught in this, like everything is really tense, you know, state. And so, I mean, pelvic floor is going to respond to that too. If we think of like shoulder tension, neck tension, jaw tension, we actually have connective tissue running from our jaw all the way down to our pelvic floor. So if we think of, oh man, I'm getting, you know, tension headaches, so I'm really grinding my teeth, well, pelvic floor is also really tight too. So we'll spend a lot of time relaxing for those people. But then also on the other end, like they need to know, oh man, I'm in the basement all the time. Like I'm just chilling way down here. I need to be able to strengthen and be able to engage and kind of lift that. And so we'll focus on a little bit more strength, but then we also think of like, how do we coordinate all of that too? So, I mean, I've had clients come in and just laying on their back is like how, you know, check for pelvic floor. And so in that position, right, it's not really strenuous. We're not really doing a whole lot of things. Like gravity isn't at play on the pelvic floor like it is when we're standing. And I've had some look great laying down, breathing. And then we added any movement, like lifting your knees up, or anything else, and pelvic floor went out the door.
Wow. Like, yeah.
Coordination was not there. And so sometimes it's not always just a strength issue, but it's like, can you coordinate it together and well as we're doing other movements? So I do internal assessments as well. I do not have to. So people are like, I think pelvic floor would be great, but I do not want that. Like, we don't have to.
Right.
We can do a lot without that, but it can be a nice tool to give us a little bit more insight. But I always do them like laying down, and then I'll also do them in standing because things can change a lot, right?
Totally.
Have them go through like a squat movement or like a deadlift, a hip hinge, especially if they're complaining of symptoms while they're squatting or, you know, doing movement. And definitely want to check in whatever position they're doing. Cause I mean, like I said, you can look great laying down and all of a sudden stand up and there goes.
Everything's compromised. Yeah.
So
I feel like so much of it comes down to awareness. And like you said, sometimes if we're always in this like high stress, like high cortisol, like go movement in life, it can be so hard to even have awareness of your body. And I feel like a great, I feel like it's even grounding, like even just taking a couple times from your day to just be like, hey, where is my pelvic floor right now? Like, how is my breath? How is my jaw? How are my shoulders? Like, just making that body scan can be so helpful in knowing like what's going on with me. So yeah, today's episode is sponsored by Rare Planet Health Supplements. I am such a firm believer in making sure that our body gets the nutrition that it needs for optimal physical performance, brain performance, and overall mood and vitality in life. Rare Planet Health has several different supplements that I have been integrating into my routine and that I highly recommend. But the one that I really want to talk about today is Rise. Rise is a dietary supplement that is a multivitamin, a probiotic, and also is formulated to help boost mental clarity. Whether you're an entrepreneur or you just want to be the best that you can at whatever it is that you're doing in life, this supplement is a great addition to your wellness routine. The bottle is super cute, which makes it really easy to integrate into your routine every morning, and it's designed to help strengthen your attention span with vitamins to help up your mental game, which I think in a digital era, we can all use. By combining a multivitamin and a probiotic, you can combat mental and bodily fatigue with a single supplement. It also provides support for intermittent fasting, improving your energy and productivity while decreasing your food cravings, if that's something that you practice, and has a large dose of vitamin A and B12, which will help your organs, nerves, and red blood cells remain healthy, as well as your skin and hair. The capsules are super easy to swallow, and each bottle contains 60 capsules, which should last you 1 to 2 months. They also offer a premium fish oil, which if you've listened to any of our episode with functional nutritionists and functional medicine doctors, as well as women hormone optimization, fish oil and omega-3s are so important for vitality and a healthy diet. They also have Ageless, which is a stem cell, joint, and tendon support supplement, and a few more on there. You can get your supplements at rareplanethealth.com and use code RAREWellnessPodcast10 at checkout for a discount on your supplements. Again, that's rareplanethealth.com. Use code RAREWellnessPodcast for 10% off on your supplement purchase. This podcast is also sponsored by Rare Wellness Med Spa and Wellness Studio. Rare Wellness is a space where you can connect to yourself and get all the tools that you need to thrive and heal and be your best self. Whether you're looking for premium yoga, bar, or movement classes, functional medicine, aesthetic services, massage services, IV hydration therapy, and more, Rare Wellness is the place for you. To get 10% off any service at Rare, use code RAREWellnessPodcast. You can book at rarewellness.com or the MindBody app. Lastly, this podcast is sponsored by NWC4RM.com, Northwest Center for Regenerative Medicine. If you're looking to reduce pain and avoid surgery, this might be the solution for you. Get back to the activities you love without surgery with regenerative medicine. Regenerative medicine is a non-surgical orthopedic procedure for joint pain, arthritis, and injuries. If you want to learn more about regenerative medicine and if this might be the solution for you so that you can avoid those surgeries and continue to get back to the activities you love operating at full capacity, go to NWC4RM.com. Regardless of where you are in the country, you can book your appointment there and do an online consultation so that you can see if this is the right fit for you. Receive a free info packet by going to nwc4rm.com and just entering your email, and you will receive more information to learn more. All right, let's head back to the episode. Are there misconceptions that you encounter in your practice pretty often about pelvic floor?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest one is that you had to have had kiddos to have pelvic floor dysfunction. I mean, I had some come in and we're like talking about it and they don't have kids and they're like wanting to start trying soon. So they're like, I just want to like make sure everything is going well. But then as we kind of get into it, they're like, oh, I've been the kid that like would laugh too hard and pee my pants all the time growing up. And then they're like, oh, I just kind of thought that was normal. I think like that's a huge one of like, oh yeah, I've had to have had kiddos. And then I think too, when we think of like prolapse, I hear, oh, my doctor said I have a prolapse and now I need to stop lifting weights. I need to stop jumping. I need to stop doing all that stuff because it's going to make it worse. I'm like, well, actually, like I said, like you actually need the base strength training in order to help with all of that. And I think the other big thing with prolapse too is this is kind of wild to me, these stats, but if we are doing like a objective, examination, so you're going to the gynecologist and they're like, oh, yep, looks like you have a prolapse. About 50% of women will have that like prolapse with an objective exam. And only about 3 to 8% of them are actually having symptoms, like that heaviness. Pressure, they're having leaking, they're having incontinence, might be having pain with sex, things like that. But like it's a huge discrepancy of people that are like, oh, I didn't even know that I had anything going. And so that kind of goes to show too that like probably just part of normal processes and kind of part of normal aging. Like I said, like as we approach menopause, we're going to see more movement of things. And so as long as if we're not really having symptoms, then we don't need to like go and be like, oh, we have to do all this stuff. I mean, we can always like, you know, improve coordination and strength and relaxation of pelvic floor. We can totally do that. But I had one client who had a surgery and they're like, oh, while we were in here, we found that you had a prolapse. So we just fixed that for you. And she's like, I didn't even know that I was like had one. I wasn't having symptoms. Like I wasn't having
Right. Symptoms.
And so I think that's kind of a big one too, is that we kind of can get told, oh, you have prolapse. But I'm like, well, I don't even know what that means. Or like, I don't have any symptoms. That's a big one. And then I think the other big one I'll see is when we think about diastasis recti. So it really becomes a strength issue when we think of kind of that core. So like I said, if we're not able to create tension across those deeper core muscles, we'll see that kind of protrusion along the midline. So we get stronger, we see that go away. Or sometimes it's not knowing how to coordinate or engage our deep core. We're trying to just use our like six pack muscles when we sit up and we're not using everything else to help us. And so, I think there too, we hear a lot, especially social media, here are 5 exercises that can prevent diastasis. And I'm like, well.
Super generalized, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, we also can't, like, get rid of it completely. Like, every single person who's pregnant is going to experience, like, baby is growing, those muscles are sitting further apart, they're lengthening. Like,
Everyone's
going to experience that. I mean, yes, we can get stronger, and that's definitely going to help us, but we can't, like, completely prevent it altogether. And then I think, kind of on the flip side in postpartum, we hear here are 5 safe exercises that you can do to help like with diastasis. Well, if we're saying there are safe exercises, that means that there are unsafe exercises. And so that I think a lot of people can kind of be very like fearful, like, oh, what am I doing? Am I going to damage my core? Is it going to make everything worse? Or, and I think we see that with prolapse a little bit too, a lot of like kind of fear driven. Oh no, I'm going to make things worse. I'm going to damage pelvic floor. I'm going to damage everything. With either of those, we're not damaging anything. It's just really our body telling us what we're able to handle. So in postpartum, if we're like, oh, I'm 10 weeks postpartum and I'm trying to do some sit-ups or, they're like, I'm noticing a lot more coning or doming. It's kind of what we refer to that, right? Kind of that protrusion along the midline. And so if they're noticing that, like sometimes people get really fearful that they're doing damage. I'm like, no, your body's telling you that exercise is a little bit too hard for you right now. And that can change day to day too. If we think of, you're newly postpartum, you didn't get any sleep last night. You skipped a meal because you were busy and taking care of baby and all of that. And so now you're going to try to do a workout and your body's like, no, I can't do that, man. I'm way too tired. This is way too hard. And then you might have, a week later, you got great sleep. Baby was sleeping well. You fueled really well. You have enough nutrition and everything. And it feels pretty easy. And you're able to do that same exercise. So it can change day to day. And but it's not doing damage. It's just your body's way of telling you where you're at and what you're able to do.
No, I'm such a believer of like listening to your body and matching your movement to fit like how did you sleep? Like, I don't know. I wear Oura Ring and I'm obsessed with this thing. But just like, I mean, and you don't need a ring to tell you this, but how, you know, how did you sleep? Like, what's the quality of like your rest? Like, what's your heart rate at? Is it elevated? Like, what part of your cycle are you in? What part of your pregnancy are you in? Like, just listening to your body. And on those days when you feel great, like, push a little extra. And on those days when you don't. And I feel like so many of us women are stuck in this like men's world of like cycle of like, I have to have a super strict training plan, and every single day of the month I'm going to go the same, like, same speed, same level of like go. And it's like you can actually see way more results when you sync your training and you sync your life to like fit your body's needs, like some, like whether it's cycle syncing or whether it's just like be intuitive, like be aware. But again, like we talked about, this awareness is something that like sometimes, especially in a fast-paced society, and if we weren't taught, like many of us grew up in cultures where we weren't taught to listen to our bodies or to pay attention to them, like your body speaks to you. Your body, like, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll definitely tell you what you're ready for or not. And like I had abdominal surgery for endometriosis excision about months ago. And like I've been back in the gym. Like I've had a really great recovery. But I'm like, there's days like since then where I'm like, oh man, I'm feeling great. And I'm like, weight just feels so heavy in the gym. Yes. And I'm like, well, I guess we're not going to do that one today. Like,
no,
you got to go a little bit lighter. And you know, it is definitely humbling. I think especially like a lot of people who have grown up in sports too, with like sports background, there's always this kind of go big, go home. Like, you know,
doesn't matter how you feel. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, 100% all the time, or you're not good enough, or, you know, you're not trying hard enough. And I think that's definitely been like a mindset shift that I have had to make. Like, okay, I'm here to move my body. And some days that's going to feel really good and I can push really hard. And other days, you know what? I got here and that is a huge win. And,
100%.
You know, so trying to kind of like adjust for that. Like, it's been hard. I feel like it's taken me like months to like feel like I'm actually at a spot to be able to be like, it's okay if I didn't go crazy heavy today.
Yes. And,
yeah.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I think for any athlete that did sports competitively, like, it is such like, the transition from like being an athlete to like living is like tough. It's just tough to figure it out. Also with endometriosis, this is something that I feel like I totally want to do another podcast episode just diving deep into. And we kind of briefly talked about it off camera. But I feel like for so many women listening, I know that's not what this podcast is about, but people deal with endometriosis and sometimes like it's undiagnosed for years. Their pain isn't taken seriously. And well, and you tell me, but there isn't really a cure. Like, there really isn't like a well-known cure, at least, you know, that people are like, this is what you need to do to like help it. So if you wouldn't mind like sharing like just super briefly on like your journey with like endometriosis, and for someone listening who's like, me too, like, what has that been like for you? Did the surgery help? Yeah.
Yeah. So I got my period pretty young growing up, and so they were always painful, but like I never missed like practice, I never missed sports,
yeah,
I never missed school, so, and they were always pretty regular, so I didn't ever really think that like I had endo because I didn't
yeah
meet, like, you know, all the kind of criteria.
Typical criteria. Yeah.
And so when I was 25, I was finishing up like rotations for physical therapy school and was getting married. It was like all the things out of right? Kind of like the perfect storm. but I was taking my boards exam. I was graduating and I was getting married like 8 weeks after graduation.
Stressful.
We bought a house in there too. Like, it was crazy. But
wow.
So I ended up in the ER thinking that I was having like appendicitis of some sort, just like severe lower abdominal pain that wasn't really going away. And at that point, they found a 7-centimeter ovarian cyst. So like twice the size of my ovary. It was huge. That would explain the pain.
Just a little bit.
And at that point, so endo doesn't really show up on the imaging. So that's also another reason why it's really, really hard to diagnose. So to be able to like actually diagnose it, you have to have had some kind of surgery to biopsy the tissue. And then it has to come back as like, oh, yep, this is endo. So on imaging, they're just like, you just have this giant cyst, but, you know, talk to your gynecologist and, you know, figure all this out. I'm like, okay, whatever. So So I go back in and he's like, oh, I'm not too worried. Like, they can go away on their own. Let's just follow up in 6 weeks. I'm like, okay. So at this point, it's now 2 weeks before our wedding, or 2.5 weeks before our wedding. And I go back in for another ultrasound and it's like, oh, it hasn't changed. It's still 7 centimeters. Like, we need to talk about a surgery. And I'm like, well, I'm getting married.
And you're like, not right now. Can we change this timing a little bit?
And we were going to Kauai on our honeymoon. And he's like, well, okay, if it was like the cyst were to rupture there, you'd probably have to be like lyophilized to Oahu, like all this stuff. So like, we need to get this out. I'm like, okay. He's like, how's Friday sound? So I ended up in the emergency surgery 2 weeks before our wedding. And during that surgery, he found stage 4 endometriosis.
Wow.
So it was like the cyst was on one ovary, kind of wrapped to the other one, and they were scarred to the uterus, which was scarred to the bladder, which was all scarred to pelvic floor. Just kind of everything was like a mess. And at the time, he's like, well, I was able to like free things up, move things around, like you should be good to go. And we're like, okay, like, is this going to affect fertility? Like, how are you? Like, I think you're fine. I don't think this will be like a big issue for you guys. We're like, okay. So we started trying a little bit later, and we tried for about a year. And then we eventually got pregnant, and then we had a miscarriage pretty early on. And then after that, I was like, okay, we're going to do all the things. And we kind of started like working with a naturopath and kind of trying like more the natural route. Especially like the surgeon was like, oh, well, you like your only way to treat endo is being on birth control. And if you don't want kids immediately, you can do medically induced menopause. And then we'll just bring you out of that when you're ready to have kids and you'll be fine. And we were like,
what could go wrong?
Yeah. Like, that doesn't sound bad at all.
Yeah.
And we were like, we don't want to do birth control. Like, just totally, like, you know, want side effects and like religious reasons as well. So like, that's just not really an option for us. And then the surgeon was like, well, fine, I guess you're just going to have more surgery. Like, that's just your option. And we were like, okay. So we didn't really go back to him after that. So we started working on like all things with naturopaths, started doing acupuncture, Chinese herbs, diet changes, all these things. We found right after the miscarriage that I had another cyst, blocked fallopian tube, kind of the start of like PCOS cysts, and I think a cyst on the other ovary. So there was kind of a lot going on, and our naturopath was like, I think we can change a lot of these things with, you know, natural approaches. We're like, okay, so I guess we're just going to hit hard with all of that. And meanwhile, I had a friend at our gym who had seen this other surgeon who specializes in endo. And she was like, you have to go see him. I don't really want another surgery, but like, fine, we'll go.
Yeah.
So we gave it like 3 months of trying all the natural things. And then we went and saw him. And we walk in and he's like, so reading over your op report from your last surgery, he didn't actually do anything. And we're like, what? He's like, yeah, so he didn't remove the cyst that was there. He drained it, but he didn't remove it. So, of course, it was going to fill back up again. And as far as, like, the endo goes, he didn't do anything. He just documented that it was everywhere and horrible. And I think he used the term, posterior cul-de-sac, which is kind of like the back half of the pelvis. But he used the term, it was completely obliterated. So gives you kind of an idea of how bad it was. But I was fine, wasn't gonna have any fertility issues. Like, it was totally fine, according to him. So we ended up scheduling for surgery with Dr. Duke, who's in Coast Falls. He's an endo excision surgeon.
Yeah.
So learned so much, and I just hosted him for an hour long discussion on endo too. So I'll post that on my
definitely go check it out, guys.
He like, we deep dive into kind of all of the misconceptions, and there's like so many myths around endo, and I can kind of briefly touch on them too here, but it's always better to, I feel like, to hear from him, who's like the expert. But I learned that where endo comes from, where the first doctor told us, like, that's not actually where endo comes from, that's not what it is. And then his whole idea of treating it, like, that's not how you treat it either. So it's like all of these things are just wrong. And then kind of learning that, like, that's what they're still teaching in medical school. So they used to think that endo was the lining of your uterus, so whenever you have your period, it would kind of regurgitate and backflow out of your fallopian tubes into your abdomen. So every time you have a cycle, those hormone changes, if you were bleeding, then your abdomen was bleeding, and then your body would like scar that down because it didn't want like that foreign substance in there. And so Dr. Duke's like, yep, that's not where it comes from. It's actually doesn't come from the uterus at all. It's more like 70% genetic. And so it's more like when you, they don't know exactly, but they think more like when you're an embryo and kind of your cells can kind of change and become whatever, one that was supposed to become like reproductive ends up getting kind of dislodged in somewhere else. So then that kind of implants in your abdomen, and then you're growing, you, and you know, you have, you're in puberty, and then you are exposed to all of these hormones, and then it starts growing at that point. And they've had, they've seen it in girls that like didn't even menstruate yet, but like had kind of started going through puberty. So the idea of like it backflowing, like it's not,
it's like, not like a theory that is supported by that.
And so this theory and everything that we kind of know about it now came out around the 90s, but they're still teaching kind of the old idea in medical school. And you said like he got about this much on endo as an OBGYN, and he's like, for a disease that affects 10% of women, like that's crazy. a lot of women. And that's no information to help them. And you said that whole idea of like, well, birth control is like your only option, or medically induced menopause. You're like, that kind of comes from if you think your cycles are controlling it, well, if we just get rid of your cycle and fluctuating hormones, then we'll take care of it.
But if it's not your cycle.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like we might see decreased symptoms, right? Like if typically with endo, you know, people have a lot more painful periods, heavy bleeding, things like that. So if we are getting rid of that, they're probably not going to be having as much symptoms, but that endo tissue itself will continue to keep growing. And it actually secretes its own estrogen. So it will kind of like throw off your hormones even more because it's just kind of keep going. Like it really behaves like a cancer. Like unless you cut it out, and kind of get all of the root of it, then like it's only a 20%. Yeah, it'll keep going, but it's like a 20% chance of coming back if you cut it all out. Versus he's like a lot of surgeons, if they will, or like OBGYNs, if they're like, well, birth control didn't work, medically induced menopause didn't work, I guess we could try surgery. They will typically cauterize the tissue or call like fulgurate. And he's like, well, you can't cauterize and burn tissue that is on your ureters, your bladder, your fallopian tubes, your uterus, your bowels, your rectum, like all of these main structures that that's kind of where a lot of endo goes. They're like, they can't actually treat any of that. So they say, you know, we cauterized what we could and we left the rest. And then he's saying, you know, a lot of that just, it'll come back scarring worse with that burning of tissues or just cause a lot more pain and problems and stuff. So his way is going in, cutting all of it out, trying to get to the root of all of it, and then kind of restoring like normal anatomy. So when he went in, my ovaries, like they should be sitting on either side of your uterus, and mine were stuck together behind with like rectum was stuck in there. My whole rectum was basically adhered to vaginal wall. It was all stuck to the pelvic floor. Like he was cutting out tissue for 2 hours, like just thin. And like the whole surgery was longer and everything. But so yeah, like wild.
What a journey. Yeah. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say like, thank you so much for sharing your story, because I know that there's going to be so many, like, I know that there's going to be someone listening who can relate. And like, we've talked about this whole episode, like so much of this is just not talked about. Yeah. And even when it is talked about, like you mentioned, like all of the misinformation out there, and like the fact that like 10% of women, like this is painful. Like it's not fun. It's not cute. Like you know, I have like friends with endometriosis. I've dealt with my own like problems and like painful periods and stuff. And like, it's like when you're dealing with it, like that's like a week of every month that you're suffering, like you're suffering and you're in pain, and not to mention like all of the other issues that come with it. And like the fact that we have like that it's not being taught accurately, like honestly makes me angry, because like these are humans that deserve like proper medical treatment and proper medical care. Yeah. Like that's – yeah. So thank you so much for like – and for someone listening, like what would you recommend that they look for in like when they're looking for help and looking for answers, like – yeah. Do you have any advice for people?
Yeah. So looking for somebody who has extra schooling in endometriosis excision. So Dr. Duke was an OBGYN and then did an additional 2 years of just learning how to do like the surgery techniques to cut out the endo. Yeah. So like he like that is all he does. Like, you know, he said he's seen over like 3,000 patients for endo, and so yeah, like that is his yeah. That is his little house. But yeah, so somebody that is trained in that, and I think too, like what makes it even worse and more confusing is that regular OBGYNs that have no training with excision will still use that term and say that they're doing excision surgery. So I ended up just talking with somebody after a workshop. But yeah, like if you have questions about this, like I'm always like, please reach out. Like I'm always happy to like grab coffee or just like sit down and chat. I don't want anybody else to have to go through like what I'm through. And like waiting 2 years to like get a surgery that like should have just been, I should have been referred to 2 years ago. Like the other surgeon knew.
Especially to be essentially lied to, like, hey, we helped and we didn't. Yeah.
Didn't do anything really. Yeah. But
wait, can you drop your Instagram handle? Sorry. Just so people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Ascend PT Spokane.
Perfect.
Yeah. But yeah, I was talking with this other lady the other day and she's like, oh, I had excision surgery. And I was like, oh, who did it? And she's like, oh, just like a local OB in town. And I was like, oh, okay. And then we like started talking more and she goes, I read over my note and it said like the whole fulguration and cauterized and left the rest of it. And I was like, so he didn't do it like excision surgery. And she's like, yeah, that's what he told me he did. And so I think we're even seeing that too, where like OBs are kind of starting to use this term of like, yeah, I do excision surgery. I think you really have to be like, okay, so what does that actually mean?
What does that mean? Yeah.
Like, what are you actually doing? And, you know, do you have extra training in that? Do you, you know, have you done a fellowship in that? And I think Dr. Duke is like the only one in our area. Like the only one, him and his business partner, Dr. Young, there's both of them are excision surgeons, but other, and they're in Post Falls, but I don't think there's any in Spokane. I think Seattle's like your next closest.
Yeah.
Or one and stuff like that. So, but yeah, and I know there's, he had mentioned, I know he's been on several other podcasts too that I've listened to and everything, but he had mentioned there's a, she has like a big resource page, but Nancy Nook, kind of big in like promoting endo, you know, awareness. Stuff like that. But she goes through and like vets doctors to be like, okay, you can be on my page as an FA specialist. And it takes like a lot of work to become like a doctor on that page. And Dr. Duke is one of those. So that can be like a great place to start. I think it's just if you Google like Nancy's Nook or something like that, and it should come up. But so kind of starting there too and kind of just seeing. But yeah, I don't think there's like as many of them as I think a lot of OBGYNs would have you believe.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're really just looking that they have like that extra training in.
Yeah. Did your journey with pelvic floor therapy and health, like did this start before your journey with endo or after? Was like, has this like changed the way that you practice at all?
Absolutely. Yeah. In school, I did not think I was going to do pelvic floor. Like my background was sports, athletics. That's what I probably liked. And we got one day of pelvic floor, training in PT school. They're like, if this is something you want to do, you'll just do continuing ed and then you can do it that way if you want to do it.
Yeah.
It seemed so boring. It was laying on your back doing breathing exercises.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I don't really.
Not for me.
I want to be able to like, do some sports, do some, you know.
Yeah.
And when I started doing some continuing ed, I found this whole program that they're very fitness forward. They're very much like, we can do strength training in all areas. And so they had a whole pelvic division that is like, it started with, can we help CrossFitters get out of, you know, having pelvic floor dysfunction? And then it just turned into now like it's a 3-part course, like 2 8-week online courses. And it's like a whole weekend live in person going over everything to get a certification in pelvic health. But starting from like ground zero, you just had a baby or like you just have surgery, you know, pelvic floor rehab and really bridging the gap into like, oh, you're only having issues when you're lifting heavy or you're running. And so kind of being able to treat all of that. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. Like I can use some of my, you know, my sports background, but I also did a part of pelvic floor. And I think too, like when I opened up my clinic, it was a little bit over a year ago. I practice out of more of like a CrossFit style.
Awesome.
Gym. So, I mean, they're not a CrossFit affiliate, but it's similar with that. But yeah. And so when we started there, I was like, there's like so many women here that are like experiencing leaking at the gym and there's not really anybody else in town who knows what to do, like the high level, like women with pelvic floor. So I was like, cool, like I'll kind of like step into that. Like, I love this. This is great. And then kind of at that same time is when we started going through all of the like infertility and miscarriage or a little bit before then and stuff. But so yeah, it like kind of definitely became part of the journey. And it was just kind of like the more I learned, the more I was like, oh my gosh. And then the more
this is supporting me. This is how I can support others. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I think too, like it wasn't until maybe 6 months ago that we were in like the first surgery, didn't actually do anything. And so I think like for a while I was kind of operating. I was like, oh, I'm fine. Like he cleared things out. We're good. And I was like, this is just taking a long time for us. And so once kind of really realizing like how broken like women's healthcare like is, and like just like experiencing that firsthand has definitely changed like my perspective, and just like I just feel so fired up about that, and just like want women to be able to like get the care they need, and especially anybody with endo. I feel like I have like little like blinders on of like anybody's like full period, and I'm like, do you have anything we need to like
honestly, like I think that's amazing, because we need more advocates. We need more advocates for women's healthcare, and then individually, like unfortunately, like we have to advocate for ourselves. Like, make sure that you're actually like you're questioning, you're finding the right providers, and you're doing your research. Because, like you said, sometimes we can trust blindly, and like we have to look out for each other, and we have to look out for ourselves. So
totally.
So, Dr. Amanda, what advice would you give to someone who suspects that they might have a pelvic floor problem but is hesitant to seek help?
They definitely, like, just make that first call. Like I said, I offer free discovery calls. So if you're like, I don't know if this even counts as pelvic floor. I don't know if there's something that you could help with. I don't know if, you know, I don't know. Just make that call. I'm happy to chat and just see where you're at and hear, you know, what you've been going through. But I think too, just like on a general level too, it's just like taking time to do some deep breathing, trying to kind of just relax and taking time just to settle down and just kind of be a little bit more in tune with your body too, and kind of just being like a little bit more aware can definitely help. And like, it might bring light of like, oh yeah, no, I definitely need help, or like, this is definitely
you
not.
You can't fix a problem you don't know you have.
Yes, totally.
Exactly. No, that is so good. Thank you so much for making time. I feel like I could talk for another like 2 hours just asking so many questions, but I feel like this is a really good overview. And just for myself, even like, I feel like I learned so much of like just understanding what the pelvic floor is, how to deal with it, why it needs to be a priority, and how to build awareness about it, and also who to go to. So thank you so much. Just thank you so much for taking time to do this. And if people have questions, if you don't mind just saying your Instagram handle one more time and your website, so that someone's listening to this and they're like, wait, I have a question. I want to ask her, like, I want to shoot a call. Like, where can they find you?
Yes, my Instagram handle is AscendPTSpokane, and then my website is AscendPTSpokane.com. So I've tried to keep it all pretty simple for you guys.
Love it. Guys, if you're listening, be sure to follow us at Wear Wellness Podcast on Instagram, and be sure to leave us a review. It would mean the world to us so that we can continue to provide you with free, valuable knowledge from the experts of well-being. And we'll see you guys next Friday. Bye.
Thank you.